Hello, everyone. This is Stefan Dooley, and this is what you're listening to is an ILTA podcast to discuss data encryption solutions as it relates to transferring data between organizations and respective parties. We wanted to have a conversation among some of your peers to talk through some points of interest as we are all investigating solutions for our respective organizations. Admittedly, a lot of this discussion has been spurred by some recent developments with a tool called TrueCrypt, which was a fairly commonly used encryption solution for wrapping up media or containers that could be transferred securely through file transfer, things of that nature. However, there was some recent PR, specifically on their website, that basically gave question as to whether or not it was continued to be supported in future releases as a sustainable software, as well as the potential that there was security risks in some versions of the software or one version of the software. So, needless to say, perception is reality, and with that perception has been a lot of dialogue around alternate solutions and understanding what it means to encrypt and move data around to meet requirements from your clients, as well as government agencies and your respective firm and their security initiatives. So kind of open up the floor to Scott or Vern. And Vern, yeah, I'll give you a little history on Vern. Vern Cole is the security architect for Perkins Coie, a 900-attorney firm based primarily in the U.S. with some Asia presence. And Vern is a member of the Legal Sec Steering Committee. Scott Rolfe is the CIO of Tucker Ellis, a 185-attorney firm based in Cleveland, Ohio. He is at the Technical Operations Team Coordinator for the 2014 ILTA Conference in Nashville. Myself, I'm Stefan Dooley. I'm a Senior Manager of Electronic Discovery and Litigation Support at Sullivan Cromwell. It's about an 800-attorney firm based out of New York and offices internationally, responsible for the Litigation Support Team as well as part of the Steering Committee for the Litigation and Practice Support Group with ILTA.
Thanks, Stefan. This is Vern. One of the things we've been dealing with is how do you transfer the data, as you mentioned, getting data between ourselves and our clients, ourselves and our third-party vendors, because we'll bring data in. I'm sure both your firms have similar processes where you're doing some of the research yourselves and you're outsourcing some of that research or e-discovery to third parties. So you got to get data. You feel like an information highway sometimes, just coming in one door and going out the other. And one of the things we've struggled to deal with a little bit, particularly since the TrueCrypt event, for lack of a better term, came up, was how do we get that data from our client securely and out to our third-party vendors securely? We'd been using TrueCrypt quite a bit for that. It was free, which is always a good price. A lot of people were already using it, probably because of the price point that was out there before. But now there's a question. And Scott, how are you guys handling that?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Vern. We're looking at a number of different solutions. We do currently still use TrueCrypt, and I think it's important to let people know that, you know, TrueCrypt is still safe. It wasn't actually hacked. The latest version that you can actually use that's usable, I believe, is 7.1a. They came out with a 7.2 license, which actually changed the license agreement and the code itself, and it only really does unencryption. It won't actually encrypt anything new. But if you go back in time and get a copy of 7.1a, you can actually still use the tool. We do still use it. We've also moved some things to BitLocker to go, and, of course, you have to be licensed for the full Windows 7 Enterprise Edition on the desktop to be able to use that feature. I think that they've now gone back and allowed it with some other versions, but I know from a business standpoint, you almost had to have an EA agreement to get correct licensing for that. So that creates issues on the other end. We've looked at Discryptor, that's D-I-S-K-C-R-Y-P-T-O-R, which is another open source project, played with that a little bit. We're investigating cloud solutions like Box.com and SkyCrypt as well. And then there's the hardware devices that you have. We traditionally used the Ricoh Remlox utility for quite a while, and it certainly is an open source, and they're fairly expensive. But we found an alternative solution called DataLocker DL3 that we've also been playing with. So we're actually all over the place. We haven't found the solution that really has met all of our needs, and certainly not one at the same price point as TrueCrypt. But that's kind of where we're at. We're exploring multiple different directions.
Yeah, here at S&C, we're experiencing the same journey, or a similar journey. I think the way we came at it was we took a step back and tried to assess, in a way we probably never did even with TrueCrypt, assess really what it is we need to do with encryption and how does it meet any minimum either algorithm requirements or basic business needs and process needs that we had, that we used just on an everyday basis and assumed with TrueCrypt. So we also took a step back and listened to our clients. Their clients started moving in some pretty significant directions. A couple of them came out with some mandates of use BitLocker or use SecureZip or the hardware-based encryption devices seem to be a very common solution across all the clients thus far. But the software-based ones, there's still some movement. So I think where we've come out is, as an interim solution, we've been comfortable with 7-Zip as a process with a few of our clients, but we do have some BitLocker support. We have, because even we have a regulator that's required BitLocker, as well as one client, and we continue to a degree, still have to handle TrueCrypt because we have a lot of media that is already enabled with TrueCrypt. So saying that TrueCrypt goes away, it just can't when you've got thousands of pieces that are already in that format. And we are looking at other types of kind of broader enterprise-based solutions other than BitLocker, like Symantec's PGP endpoint, Checkpoint being another solution. But those have such a larger impact, both from cost as well as process in kind of incorporating into our normal IT policies. We have to be more measured. It's just it's a bigger decision for all intents and purposes.
And one of the things we found, we are going through kind of the same, this is Vern again with Perkins, through the same kind of life cycle review. And the timing of the TrueCrypt announcement couldn't have been more perfect from our perspective because we'd just been through a roughly 3-month process review with our litigation support teams and had settled on, okay, this is how we're going to handle encryption coming and going, and TrueCrypt's going to be our standard, and we mapped out all these processes. And literally 3 days before we launched that program, TrueCrypt announced. I'm like, oh, this is great. Perfect timing. Thanks, guys. One of the things we've kind of come up against is because TrueCrypt was so easy to pass around, we could include it when we sent media to another company. This is encrypted, or it's a TrueCrypt container, and by the way, here's the install. If you don't have TrueCrypt, and here's a little document that tells you how to do it, we'll send you the rest of the pieces, namely the password and such that you need separately. Something like PGP can't really do that with. You can create self-decrypting archives, but that's not quite the same thing as encrypting an entire hard drive, 500 gig hard drive or something.
To your point, Vern, even the self-extracting hard drives, if it's an EXE, we run into the challenge of, you know, there's policies in place, intentional policies, that refuse the ability to execute executable EXE files. So that becomes a challenge with using that solution, too.
This is Scott from Tucker. We've run into issues as well with some of the data sets that we have to pass around now where people are imaging entire servers, you know, RAID arrays. Just the other day, our Lit support department got in a terabyte drive that was encrypted. Just the encryption of that took 2 or 3 days to copy and encrypt as it was moving. And I think attorneys don't always have a great appreciation for just how long it takes to just copy some of these large data sets. And then when you have to encrypt that on top of it, you're even extending the time even more, which is one of the reasons that we've looked at those kind of hardware-based devices, because they are a little bit faster. But it certainly presents a new challenge for us.
The hardware-based tools are interesting. We've found them to be a little more pricey.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to buy stock in those companies. They're going to shoot us.
That's a great idea.
No, I'm not. Full disclosure.
Well, one of the things I was impressed with the Data Locker product is it actually will work with SkyCrypt, so you can actually use Google Authenticator and encrypt the drive itself, which is kind of neat. It'll encrypt not only SkyCrypt will do not only mass storage up in the cloud, but you can point it at a folder or a USB drive and encrypt it that way. So that's been one of the nice things is we're able to actually add that two-factor authentication piece into some of these pieces.
Now, are you using pre-encrypted containers where you can?
We generally do.
Yeah.
If we can with the hardware devices. How about you, Stefan? What do you guys do?
Well, it kind of mandated that with BitLocker because it takes a very long time, and it's a hardware-based encryption. So if I've only got 250-gig hard drives, we ended up just encrypting the drives in advance and then putting those aside and saying those are BitLocker-enabled because we didn't deploy it through the whole firm. We just kind of turned it on, for all intents and purposes, within Windows 7, and put a couple of machines aside to accommodate that solution, and it wasn't a firm-wide solution or a project-wide solution that we were using. It's only kind of on a few projects.
We've tried using BitLocker to go as well. It does take an inordinate amount of time to encrypt some, even like a small drive, an 8-gig drive takes a fair amount of time, and it's kind of hard to, like you've already mentioned, hard to explain that to the attorney when he's pounding on your door, get this out right now, get this out right now. Well, we have to do this safely, and to do that, we have to encrypt it. So trying to get that in place in advance has helped, I think, a fair amount because then it's no additional overhead other than just copying the files, which they're kind of used to already.
Yeah.
But they're not used to, well, we got to copy the file, and then we got to encrypt the files. So we found that having that container in advance really helps. How have you been dealing with the cross-platform issues with, or if you're running into these issues? We've run into a little bit with BitLocker to go. Have you had any problems with that?
We use the zip format if it's cross-platform. That's the only thing that we've found that works reliably. The Descriptor product I mentioned earlier is Windows only. But how do you guys handle the secrets themselves? And handling that secret over time. We've generally had a database that we've secured, keeping a hold of all our secrets and all the media that gets sent out so that we can match the two up should we need to have the password, you know, a year down the line when people leave and don't remember what it was. But as we look at a lot of these different tools, our challenge is, you know, how do we best keep those secrets or sometimes even certificates on file through the life or the valuable life of the media itself.
We maintain a log of those pieces of information so that, and it's basically in two different places, two different locations. It's all separate from the media itself, but it's able to kind of reconcile back when we need to.
We have a cleverly named tool called Secret Server. It's a password management. Yeah, it is. Psychotix, password management tool.
Yeah, we're looking at that.
That was it doesn't do as much as a number of the other, like CyberArk or some of the other larger enterprise password management tools, but it's been pretty great for what we targeted that project for. And then after that was stood up, when we started looking at the processes for our litigation support group, that was a natural fit. We can give them access to that tool. It's a web-based password management suite, and they now have their own templates in there to create passwords, and you can even attach a key, a digital certificate if needs be, and it's all handled within that tool. It has access controls, and we can give access to a client team or to a specific group within the litigation support team. That's been pretty successful, we've found.
Have you guys noticed?
Go ahead.
Have you had clients drive any of the policies that you've had to? Because we've had some significant. The timing was kind of ideal. Well, not completely ideal, but there was a lot of movement happening around security in general, and that includes, you know, DLP, overall, kind of bolstering across our security management policies, both process and systems. So, are you finding some of the questionnaires that come down or the audits, those are impacting some of your decisions on what encryption solution you have to be, and do they differ significantly?
This is Scott from Tucker. We're getting these requests more and more. It's surprisingly how much they look like a checklist, and not a set of directions for how they want things done, which is very interesting because they will ask questions about, you know, do you encrypt your hard drives or do you encrypt emails? But they're very unspecific, I guess is a word I'll make up and use, as to how they want that accomplished. Now, email is pretty easy because everybody does TLS, and that makes a lot of sense, and maybe throw some PGP in there for all the way to the endpoints. But it's much more difficult when you start talking about disk encryption, data encryption in general, as there's so many different standards and algorithms and the ability to use multiple algorithms on the same data. So it's very open. One of the articles that I was actually reading that the government had put out was people are actually over-encrypting and putting in so much encryption with, you know, three different types of algorithms and things that it really pays a performance penalty when you work with larger data sets. And you can reasonably be safe with something like, you know, AES at 256 bits is going to be, you know, that's going to be secure for the next 20 years if you follow the computing model of how fast things are moving. So it's been interesting hearing both sides of the scales on that argument as to how much encryption is too much and what algorithms are the best to use. But it's a little daunting trying to understand and match up all of these different standards if you're trying to be ISO certified and you're trying to get into things like, you know, the NIST best practices. Those documents, once again, come up and say you need to encrypt, but it doesn't give you a specific level or a specific benchmark, which makes the whole discussion very, very difficult and hard to sort out and wade through.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of the same things that you guys are seeing. We don't have as much on the banking side of the house. We do a little bit in that area. They're starting to really focus on law firms and driving those security programs, but we're seeing in our outside counsel guidelines now some very specific requirements around security programs that we didn't see before. So that's been interesting. It's also been interesting to see how different clients are approaching TrueCrypt. And we've been talking with some of our client teams. A couple of them have come to us to say, we've got a real concern with this. We've been using TrueCrypt with our client, but we're worried that the client is going to say, no, we can't do that anymore. And the responses have been all across the board. One client said, yeah, that's nice. We like some of those options. We looked at 7-Zip. We looked at a WinZip product. But we know TrueCrypt. We understand TrueCrypt. It works for us. We're going to continue using it. Another one of our government clients said, no, we can't do this anymore. So that's been an interesting discussion and how many different paths those discussions have taken entirely based on the client.
Are they actually specifically telling you what algorithms and what bit length to use on the encryption?
It's, again, driven. It's as varied as we have many different clients. Some clients are doing what you mentioned earlier. You need to encrypt. We don't care what algorithm, which is a little concerning because we have to be compatible, right? Well, if we encrypt with AES and you're looking for a triple DES, we're just not going to be able to transfer data in a meaningful way anyway. So we're often going back to the client and saying, here's what we can do. Here's our standard. And hopefully that works for you. If it doesn't, we need to agree on something. And then some of our more security savvy clients are coming back and saying, we want to use this. So can you meet that? And we've had some back and forth with a couple of those clients to get to something. They start off with something that's NSA NIST level. Okay, we don't quite have that level of a program yet. Can we do something that's more at an ISO level? And they're happy with that. So we try to meet somewhere in the middle.
Has anyone audited your security encryption program? Any clients actually come in and done an audit? Or has it just been RFP responses and guidelines?
At Perkins, I'm just trying to remember, we've had a few audits, but they're general audits that come in and they look at how we're doing encryption, and they'll look at bit strength and that kind of thing, but it's not where they're being prescriptive. Well, you're using AES 128, but we want 256. So we haven't had that kind of discussion, and maybe we're using 256-bit encryption anyway. So maybe what they've seen hasn't led to follow-on discussions in some of those areas because they're happy with what we're doing. They've had comments on other things outside of encryption, and we've worked through those, of course, but not so much on the encryption side so far.
It's interesting. I was talking to another CIO in Cleveland about his firm because they chose to go with cyber insurance as a remedy to try and deal with some of these regulatory and compliance issues. This is a just, you know, a set of insurance, and the insurance company actually came in and with their audit and provided actually better direction than they had gotten from anyone else on what you need to do to be secure in 2014. So I thought that's kind of an interesting place to hear guidelines from.
Yeah, I've been hearing some recent talk about that, not internally, but just in discussions with a group in here in New York where we've just talking about the security topic, and the insurance thing has come up as a measure to help alleviate some of the risk and some of the concern. I don't have a lot of knowledge about it as far as what we've done here at SS&C, but I could see how it would bring some value. I think one of the questions that's been asked of us is there's developing a solution for encryption and clearly a process, which is, you know, just as important as putting the technical solution in. Then the next level for us is tracking who and when, you know, preferably system-wide. So any and all data that's copied off and encrypted, knowing what data source that was, as well as who and when they did that. Are you guys seeing that kind of requirement? Do you think that's where it's going?
This is Scott. I know I was doing some research on the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which is comes into play for people to deal with the banks. And in one of the articles, they talked to that topic, but it wasn't in great detail. I wish it was. What I had read was that there are hardware solutions now that provide both the encryption and an audit trail on the same device. Unfortunately, they did not name what the device was, so I haven't been able to crack the code yet to figure out what they're using. My understanding is it's something very similar to the data locker RemLocks, where you type in a passcode and you have maybe a secondary two-factor authentication key with an RFID card, but it actually will. It has some type of a GPS locator in it, and it'll say at what point, you know, where this was decrypted, and timestamp it as well, which I thought was interesting. I'd love to know what that secret sauce is that they mentioned, because I couldn't find it anywhere.
We haven't had that level of requirement come through yet. I can certainly see that's as more and more entities are taking more interest in security, the requirements are going to start to step up. So it'll be interesting to see when we start seeing more of that.
Yeah, I think the industry right now is in a position where, you know, you make your best effort, you document what the best effort is, and you hope that it's good enough. Without some more firm guidelines, and by firm I mean, you know, not just specifically product name, but what algorithms you're using, the methods that go behind the encryption. You know, there's a difference between encrypting the container before and after the data's on it, and it makes a difference depending on the technology in play. So until there's guidelines in place for some of those things, I think we're left to fend on our own for our best solution that we can come up with.
Yeah, the word I've heard, and it's rather appropriate, it's a legalese word, but it's reasonable effort, right? Because there are so many different elements that you're trying to play to at the same time in requirements. You have to have a level of reason and reasonableness, and as long as you're talking to the right people and you're demonstrating that you are trying to have active discussions, I think you're absolutely right. It's something that it's going to be a journey for a lot of people until there's more defined standards.
All right, Stefan, so here's a question for you. What are you using at home?
My wife has an encryption policy. off the computer. Hang it from the wall.
I'm TrueCrypt at home still. I'm still trusting it with my personal data. My feeling is if Amazon trusts it, I trust it.
Nice.
I'm more of a Mac person at home, so we're a file vault in general.
All right. Well, I think we're coming to a close here on our podcast. I want to thank everybody that was part of the call. I think we had a great discussion today. And if you'd like to learn more, the ILTA conference in Nashville this year is going to have a full day or one session on one of the days on full disk encryption. So it should be very exciting. I'm looking forward to talking to some of you guys at conference and hearing what you've learned in the time that's passed. So thanks for attending our conference or our podcast today, and we'll see you next time.